stop the spread, it would also complicate people's lives for years. We know that when the foundations of people's lives fall apart, when they lose their home, for example, the pain tends to follow them forever. Studies show that being evicted is correlated with lower lifetime earnings and more frequent trips to the ER. Eviction leads to worse learning outcomes for children who have to be pulled out of schools. And of course, it also leads to increased rates of homelessness. We call all this economic scarring. We're taking an all-of-government approach to prevent this scarring. When the Supreme Court struck down the CDC's eviction moratorium 2 weeks ago, I wrote a letter with Attorney General Garland and HUD Secretary Fudge. We encourage governors, mayors, and judges across the country to put in place their own eviction moratoria where legally possible. Some, like Mayor Kim Janey of Boston, did, and I know she's with us today. About 47% of the country's renters are now living in places with some state or local measure in place to stop evictions. That's significant coverage, but it still leaves millions of Americans in jeopardy of being evicted. The clock is ticking, and the people you'll hear from today are working quickly to help renters and landlords get back on their feet. We're fortunate to have a very potent tool in this effort, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. Prior to the pandemic, there was essentially no national infrastructure to get money from government coffers to renters and landlords. Building that infrastructure has been a massive undertaking, both by our team at Treasury and by a constellation of state and local governments. We're starting to see it scale now. As of July 31st, state and local grantees had made about 1 million rental payments and spent more than $5 billion in ERA program funding. It's welcome progress, but we also know it's not enough. Too many renters and landlords are stuck in limbo. According to public dashboards, hundreds of thousands of assistance applications have been received, but not yet paid out. I want you to know we're doing everything we can to expedite the delivery of these funds. Our department has taken a very large pair of scissors to any red tape. We eliminated the need for unduly burdensome documentation on the part of landlords or renters. We know not everyone has a formal lease or can easily get proof of their income. We're encouraging all rental assistance programs to accept self-certification from applicants about their financial hardship, income, or risk of homelessness. And we're doing everything we can to ensure that eviction is never a first resort. In fact, when Attorney General Garland, Secretary Fudge, and I sent that letter to states and communities, we urged them to put in place guidelines ensuring eviction was only a last resort. People facing eviction should first have the opportunity to apply for rental assistance and be protected while their application is processing. Many states and localities are making use of this flexibility, and you'll hear from some of them shortly. But now we need everyone, every state and every community, to try to match this spirit of urgency and expediency and to take advantage of the flexibility we're providing. Because frankly, not everyone is. Indeed, Treasury has reminded states and localities that if their program is not working by the end of September, the funds can begin to be reallocated to programs that are working. While our strong preference is for each jurisdiction to use the full amount of its original ERA allocation, our goal is to ensure these funds reach people in need as Congress intended. We'll have more to share as we approach that September 30th date. And with that, let me hand things over to Jean Sperling, who's coordinating the implementation of COVID relief across the administration. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Secretary Yellen, who's on the front lines now on everything from the new reconciliation package to major international issues, and yet is still leading us, this administration, on eviction policy as well. You know, on July 29th, the president asked mayors and governors to step up their efforts to speed emergency rental assistance, pass state and local eviction moratorium, and fund eviction diversion programs in courts across the country. August 27th, you saw the Attorney General and the Secretaries HUD and Treasury reiterate that call. Today, you will be hearing directly from state and local leaders who have answered that call. When the emergency rental assistance was passed, our nation did not have any national infrastructure for a humane national eviction policy. We know from experts like Matt Desmond that 3.6 million evictions were filed every year, even before the crisis, in regular years, often for back rent of only $500 or $600. These local leaders were asked to help build that infrastructure, often from scratch, at a time of economic and public health crisis. The people here that you're seeing today, that you'll hear from today, are the ones who have gone that extra mile, have responded with urgency and effectiveness to responding to the crisis and to help build a lasting infrastructure for humane policies to prevent unnecessary evictions. Today, you'll hear from Governor Inslee and Mayor Rainey, who have used different forms of eviction diversion and moratorium to protect vulnerable renters. Across the country, there are other states like Minnesota that has forestalled evictions for pending ERA applications until June 2022. Connecticut and Virginia, as you hear, have states where landlords cannot file for evictions until they apply for the emergency rental assistance. But today, we are also highlighting those local leaders who have been the most successful in distributing quickly and effectively their emergency rental assistance funds. There's no question that among the policies for preventing unnecessary and heartbreaking evictions, emergency rental assistance is the win-win-win policy. It allows for us to pay back and forward rent and utilities for up to 18 months. That means that it can make landlords completely whole while securing housing, safe and secure housing for vulnerable families, as opposed to forcing them to deal with the heartbreak and often downward spiral that comes with eviction, the scarring that Secretary Yellen mentioned. We have long known that this is a race to get out those emergency rental assistance dollars to prevent such unnecessary and heartbreaking evictions. We wish the national eviction moratorium could have gone longer, but particularly with the national eviction moratorium being struck down by this Supreme Court, it has made it all the more essential for state and local governments to step up on court diversion, on eviction moratoriums, and to get the emergency rental assistance out in a more speedy manner. To be clear, the emergency rental assistance is thus far making a meaningful impact on preventing eviction diversion. The emergency rental assistance is so far making a meaningful impact on preventing evictions, but there remains a meaningful and painful gap that must be closed. In judging the effectiveness of this program, we have to look at how much we are meeting the need. Now, judging it by how much of $46.5 billion is being used, an amount of money that is available for up to 4 years is not informative and even misleading. But even when we use appropriate comparisons, we are still going to fall short without continued acceleration of efforts by local leaders and governors across this country. We need to at least have $16 billion out in the next couple of months. If we continue on our current pace, we will be at just over half of that. We're at $5.2 billion now. We'll be at $9, $10 billion in the next 2-3 months. That, again, will have a meaningful impact, but it will leave a meaningful gap for hundreds of thousands of families that we need to do everything we can to protect. The Treasury and the administration has continually sought to listen and respond to advocates, mayors, governors, grantee, experts on what we can do through our guidance, through our persuasion, through our convening, and soon through reallocation to push out more funding. What is clear, and as a result, we have put forward new guidance on May 7th, on June 24th, on August 25th, and led a national effort to increase eviction diversion programs across the country. What is clear is that where state and local leaders take leadership, take ownership, and use the flexibilities that Treasury has given, the emergency rental assistance can and does work well. There are 22 jurisdictions that have put out over 85% of their funds. Let me repeat that. 22 jurisdictions have put out over 85% of their funds by just the end of July. Today, we are going to hear from two cities and one counties that are between 92 and 100% of getting their funds out, and from a governor in Virginia who has effectively used flexibilities in areas like bulk payment and others to show the possibilities of states as well as cities moving these funds out. This is not just the people you will see today from Will County, Illinois, and Summit County, Colorado are over 100%. Salt Lake City is at 90%. Milwaukee County at 95%. Mecklenburg at 89%. We've seen big reports of surges in August in Miami-Dade County and other places around this country. This can and does work. And if you think that the idea of this session today, open to the press, is that by highlighting the effective and successful distribution of emergency rental assistance by some leading mayors and county leaders in government will put more pressure on their peers to meet and match their performance, then you would be right. We want for the over 2,000 people here, for people in other mayor and government counties office, for people who cover this, to see firsthand how well the emergency rental assistance plan can work where we have the leadership and the use of the Treasury flexibilities that are available. With that, I will turn it over to our Chief Recovery Officer at the Treasury Department, my good friend Jacob Liebenlef, who will now start talking to the reason you all are here, to governors and mayors and county leaders to discuss their use of the emergency rental assistance and other mechanisms for preventing unnecessary evictions.
Thank you so much, Gene, for that introduction and for sharing some of the information about what states and localities can do to quickly get rental assistance funds into the hands of those who need it. And I just want to thank everyone for joining us here today, particularly all the jurisdictions that are hard at work to assist tenants in their communities. We hope that today's event can underscore the considerable tools that we have at Treasury have made available to emergency rental assistance program grantees to help them provide assistance to qualified renters so that they can stay in their homes. From the ability to use fact-based proxies to self-attestation with respect to a household's financial hardship, risk of housing instability, or income, leading jurisdictions from across the country have shown how grantees can incorporate flexibilities within the program to speed the delivery of assistance. But what we wanted to make sure we were doing today was not hearing necessarily just from us at Treasury or in the administration, but firsthand from those who are on the ground and getting assistance out to those who need it. And so I'm very pleased to be able to introduce four leaders, Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, Mayor Greg Fisher of Louisville, Mayor Rod Nirenberg of San Antonio, and Judge Lena Hidalgo of Harris County, Texas, who will each walk through some of what their jurisdictions are doing in the rental assistance program. Consistent with Treasury's guidance, these jurisdictions have eliminated barriers so that money can flow more quickly to those who need it, and they have worked diligently and creatively to reach those who need help. And these four leaders have all taken robust approaches to outreach and partnerships to make sure that people are aware of the rental assistance resources available in their region. I'm going to begin by introducing Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, whose state has been one of the national leaders in getting rental assistance funds out quickly. As of July 31st, the state of Virginia had provided over $282 million in emergency rental assistance. For example, following Treasury's May 7th guidance, Virginia implemented a fact-based proxy approach to determining income eligibility, which helped expedite over 13,000 applications, cutting a pending application backlog at that time nearly in half. And the state, as you'll hear, has been pursuing policies to make sure applicants are able to get through the process by streamlining paperwork and using outreach phone calls to those with incomplete applications. Combined with translation services, this targeted and direct phone outreach has helped push many applicants in high-need areas to complete their applications. So with that, I'm pleased to turn it over to Governor Northam to tell us more about Virginia's program. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, and Jacob, thank you so much for your work and also for the kind introduction. And I really want to thank all of you for inviting me to join you today to talk about the important work of preventing evictions and keeping people in their homes. I wish, as I always say, we could be in person today, but we are still in the middle of COVID, and I would be remiss if I didn't encourage everybody that hasn't taken advantage of being vaccinated to roll up your sleeve and get a vaccine. That's the way we're going to put this pandemic behind us. So I want to take this opportunity to really thank President Biden, Vice President Harris, and Secretary Yellen and her team at the U.S. Treasury for their partnership with states and localities on quickly making emergency rental assistance available to states and localities. I also want to thank our congressional leadership and say a special thank you to our Virginia congressional delegation, including Senator Kaine and Senator Warner, who, as you all know, were prior governors in our Commonwealth and who have really helped and led to provide unprecedented federal resources for emergency and rental assistance and other pandemic resources. As we all know, housing instability has long been a national challenge. Right here in Virginia, we have worked to be the national leader in preventing evictions and in providing shelter for people who are experiencing homelessness. When I came into office in 2018, we had three housing goals. We wanted to increase the supply of affordable housing. We wanted to increase the supply of permanent supportive housing and to reduce evictions. And we've made great strides on all three. Even prior to this terrible pandemic, we were building up new policies and programs to reduce evictions. We launched the Virginia Eviction Reduction Pilot Program, which offered eviction prevention and diversion services and demonstrated what services work best to stabilize households that are facing evictions. But as we know, the pandemic laid bare in even starker terms how too many families, especially communities of color and households with young children, are one financial challenge away from being evicted from their homes. And as the pandemic's first weeks became months, we knew we needed to act quickly. So in June of last year, Virginia became one of the first states to start a statewide rent relief program. The Virginia Department of Housing and Community Development and local agencies launched the rent relief program using CARES Act funding to keep people in their homes. And we quickly expanded it to include a process for landlords to apply for rental assistance on behalf of their tenants through Virginia Housing, our state housing finance agency. And I want to tell you, demand was high. And by last winter, we needed additional federal assistance. We worked with Virginia's legislature to provide bridge funding through the Virginia Housing Trust Fund to ensure this vital resource continued to be available to tenants and landlords. By February of this year, we were able to tap into emergency rental assistance, also known as ERA, 1.0 funding, and Virginia's total allocation for the Virginia Rent Relief Program has exceeded $524 million. Since February, Virginia has distributed over $320 million, more than 60% of our ERA 1.0 allocation. And all told, since the inception of the program, the Virginia Rent Relief Program has disbursed more than $365 million for 67,000 rent relief payments for 62,000 households throughout Virginia. The majority of those households are families with children in the home. More than half of the assisted households identified as Black. The key to our program's success has been the requirement that tenants and landlords work together. When they become partners, working closely throughout the process, it ensures that tenants remain in their homes and landlords get the rental payments that they need. We have seen unprecedented cooperation between landlord associations and tenant advocates with this collaborative approach, expanding both our capacity and efficiency. We've also focused on outreach efforts to ensure that we're including historically disadvantaged communities. In June of this year, we launched the Virginia Rent Relief Program's Outreach and Engagement Grant, aiming to strategically promote RRP within historically economically disadvantaged communities and to assist households and landlords who have accessibility issues, limited access to the internet, or language barriers. Virginia has used the flexible guidance provided by Treasury in a number of ways to simplify the application process and ensure quick access to funding. We have used fact-specific proxy to pre-income qualify households in 500 zip codes, allowing us to expedite processing of thousands of applications from the lowest income neighborhoods in our commonwealth. Virginia has also use flexible guidance to pre-qualify households accessing TANF, WIC, SNAP, and LIHEAP, the most commonly accessed programs for low-income households in Virginia. Virginia also relies on self-certifications as allowed by Treasury, including COVID financial hardship, income certification for households with zero income, income certification for households who are unbanked or have a cash-only income, and income certification for self-employed earners. With all the work we do in housing, it is critical that we approach this work through the lens of equity and inclusion. We continue working to dismantle the lingering impacts of redlining and other policies that have led to inequitable housing options. In addition to launching the rent relief program, we work with our General Assembly to enact more protections for tenants. those will stay in place beyond this pandemic. Landlords may not deny a potential tenant application based solely on their payment history or an eviction for non-payment of rent that occurred during the pandemic. And tenants now have 2 weeks instead of 5 days to pay rent after being served a non-payment notice. Additionally, Virginia has also provided ARPA funding and additional state resources to boost legal representation for tenants in housing-related cases. We've made some incredible strides in our efforts to keep Virginians in their homes, but we know there's still work to be done. And again, I just want to say thanks to additional federal investment to protect homeowners. This fall, Virginia Housing will launch the Virginia Mortgage Relief Program with approximately $250 million in American Rescue Plan funds, helping ensure that every family has a stable place to live, stay safe and healthy while navigating the pandemic is vital for everyone. So here in Virginia, we are committed to preventing evictions, helping financially distressed Virginians get back on track with their rent payments, and assisting our housing provider community receive the payments they depend on to run their rental properties. Increasing access to affordable and safe housing remains a top priority of our administration, a sentiment I know I share with Vice President Harris and President Biden. So I look forward to our continued work together as we create vibrant, sustainable, and resilient communities across this great nation. Thank you so much and stay safe.
Thank you so much, Governor Northam. And I particularly appreciate your reference to Virginia's efforts to not only use ERA funds, but also other state and local funds from the ARP to help provide, for example, legal services to those who need it and other eviction prevention efforts. I want to turn next to Mayor Fisher of Louisville. Louisville is a city that has spent its entire ERA 1 allocation already, and it has been working closely with his governor to build efficiencies for rental assistance across the entire state. He'll give us some details on Louisville's approach to income verification, which has taken advantage of the flexibilities that have been provided by Treasury, and also speak to how the use of fact-based proxies and other tools have really unlocked the city's program to thousands more renters while cutting application processing time. Mayor Fisher, I'll turn it to you.
Thank you, Jacob, and I too want to thank the Biden team for putting our people and our families first. It's always a great investment in the American people, and this program is a wonderful example of that. The National Low Income Housing Coalition just published a report in July on U.S. Treasury data, and it stated that Louisville's paid out 90% plus of our eviction prevention funds that we've been allocated through ERAP. So we're proud of our work here, but we're never going to be done and never satisfied until everybody is housed. We've had about $10 million from the American Rescue Plan funds and a significant $27 million allocation of our state ERAP funds. So we've put out so far about $51 million so far, helped 29,000 residents as of July 31st. And for some context, our population is about 800,000 people here in Louisville. I think we're making progress for three reasons. One is from the very beginning, we saw this as a significant challenge because we're ramping up some capacity that we had that was just not intended to be able to produce this kind of volume. So we looked at it from the very beginning as needing a major process redesign and then some major resource assistance as well. Secondly, is we knew that we would have to have strong partnerships with the state and the court system and some of our nonprofits in the city and the state. So we started convening and talking to everybody right away. And then third is we had to bring on more people. We had to hire interns and temps so that we could throw more resources at this challenge. Now, the Biden administration has been impressive throughout this because they've been able to adjust and they've been flexible as needed throughout the program to adjust to the reality that we all face as mayors and governors and judges. So that flexibility has been key. One of the primary areas has been through self-attestation and fact-specific proxies to reduce income document requirements in high-need areas so we could get out more assistance more quickly. And it's, I can't emphasize enough the importance to take advantage of these tools to get the money out the door. So our key steps, one is we started by having every tenant self-certify their income at the time of application and then required them to submit supporting documentation thereafter. That typically has been our biggest bottleneck at time, people getting their documentation together quickly. So we start at the very beginning of the process. Two, we accepted whatever they could provide relative to self-attestation. And if they could only get us two pay stubs, for instance, we accepted that, extrapolated their income based on what we had. We always erred on the high side to ensure that we were not assisting people who were not qualified. For folks with unconventional income, let's say they work for cash, we developed a non-conventional income form so that they could get through the process. And throughout this, we kind of put an umbrella of compassion and empathy on this because, look, folks are going through a really tough time right now. So this likely is not the only challenge that they have in their life in terms of eviction going on. So assisting them in many different manners was important in having a culture of compassion around this. Most of the people, as we know, that we're assisting are less than 30% of the area median income, which is less than $26,000 for a family of four in Louisville. And so our lower income residents, sometimes they need support and sometimes they may not have the knowledge they need to get through a process like this. So wherever we could support them along the way, stand up for their rights, we were emphatic on that each and every day and still are. Critical part of this was establishing a right to counsel program in partnership with our great legal aid society in Louisville and our local nonprofit, the Coalition for the Homeless. And that program is being funded with $400,000 in American Rescue Plan money. So all this stuff works together in a very thoughtful way. We also hired more than 40 temporary employees and college interns to help our Office of Housing and our Office of Resilience and Community Services to process applications. And so we just needed that because of the volume that was coming through. Also, critical partners came on board. We have a really dedicated group of nonprofit and grassroots organizations that make up our Eviction Diversion Task Force. This group is responsible for launching StopMyEviction.org, a very clever title, I know, but very straightforward on what it does. It's a one-stop shop for us, single point of entry for all eviction prevention services in Louisville with links to state programs as well. The state partnership was critical. We put a learning cohort together that meets biweekly with the Kentucky Housing Corporation and our second biggest city in Kentucky, which is the great city of Lexington. So we wanted to make sure that we had a uniform program and that we were learning from each other, sharing documentations, form, taking out red tape, et cetera. One of the big things that came out of that, and Governor Northam referred to it, we've done it in Kentucky as well, is the Kentucky Housing Corporation began working on a fact-specific proxy to be used across the state. So we launched that in late May. And the FSP is based on the median renter household in every zip code in Kentucky. In all but three zip codes in Louisville, the median renter income is below the 80% limit required by ERAP. So we could really scale up our response quickly with that. So with that information and a self-attestation form, we could move much more quickly to get out these funds. For the funds that didn't qualify or for the zip codes that didn't qualify, we get as much documentation as they have available and then have them self-attest to their income as well. But in fact, specific proxy was really key for us starting to more rapidly move dollars out the door. Our wait time has been condensed from 16 weeks to about 10, and our goal is 4 weeks. And then lastly, using the $10 million in American Rescue Plan funds that I mentioned earlier, we were able to start cutting checks to tenants directly if their landlord would not agree to accept the funds from Louisville Metro, because we have had some challenges with some of our landlords. So this way, the tenants can still obtain the assistance they need. So if you'd like any additional information, you can contact Marilyn.Harris at LouisvilleKY.gov. Marilyn and her team have done a really outstanding job, and I am very grateful to them. So thanks, everybody. Appreciate the opportunity here on this wonderful opportunity to help our people.
Thank you so much, Mayor Fisher, and thank you for that generous offer to connect others with those who are doing the work in Louisville. you know, you mentioned your efforts at collaboration with the state of Kentucky. Our next grantee, Harris County, Texas, has also been very focused on collaboration, partnering with the city of Houston to make sure that their efforts are coordinated given their overlapping geographies. And as of July 31st, Harris County has provided $68 million in emergency rental assistance, approximately 92% of the county's ERA 1 allocation. Harris County's program has prioritized households with a rental obligation below fair market rent as a proxy for vulnerability to housing insecurity, and really focused on targeted outreach and support to applicants with an active eviction case. So it's my pleasure to introduce Judge Lena Hidalgo, who leads Harris County's governing body, to talk more about Harris County's work.
Thank you, Jacob, and it's great to join everyone. I want to thank, of course, the Biden administration, our Harris County Congressional Delegation always, but really the administration for recognizing that in the fight against this virus and against the economic repercussions of the virus, local governments are really at the tip of the spear. That's enormous help for us. We have erred on the side of action at every step in Harris County. We're home to 34 cities, including the city of Houston, about 4.7 million residents, which is larger than the population of 26 states. And so every turn of this pandemic, we've been focused on what we can do to help folks most efficiently. At one point, we were asking people to stay home, and many folks found themselves with no home to stay in. Then the state issued an order that eliminated my ability to prevent evictions. So we focused very much on trying to keep people housed. We began using local funds for small business assistance, for rental assistance, but it simply wasn't enough. And the federal government help through the rental assistance program has been enormous, enormous for our community. We've been focusing on three areas. First is efficiency. That has been key. Second is making sure that there is equity as well in the program. And third is building a program that is innovative. And before I go into these three areas, I want to acknowledge Mayor Sylvester Turner of the City of Houston. Part of what Jacob mentioned, what has been key to the success of the program, has been the coordination between Harris County and the City of Houston. And Mayor Turner and his team have been incredible partners. Without their partnership, without their leadership, none of what I will talk about would have been possible. So starting with the efficiency piece, we received the funds in February. By early March, we had began distributing some of the funding. As of this week, and these are some more updated numbers, as of this week, we have distributed $188 million. That is all of our round one funding, as well as all of the first part of our round two funding, and we're already digging into the second part of our round two funding, which just arrived last week. We have distributed this $188 million amongst almost 50,000 households, around 10,000 landlords, which represent 20,000 properties. And that's on top of the investments we've made on rental assistance, on small business assistance, on direct financial assistance as well from the American Rescue Plan funds. We have worked on this efficiency through collaboration. It's been key, and that's going to continue to be our marching direction, is to make sure that these dollars get out the door quickly. In fact, we have 38,000 applications being processed right now in the queue, so enough applications for an additional around $130 million. But we're getting through all of our funding. The second piece is equity. We're not just guessing where the need is. We've built an equity dashboard that uses a formula, a smart formula that looks at issues and factors such as the social vulnerability index by the Centers for Disease Control and other areas to identify which parts of town, which census tracts are at most need? Where are the folks that truly, truly need these funds? And we're directing our resources there. We have a team of navigators that really hold the hands of applicants that work with landlords or without landlords, if need be, if we're not getting that support. We're sending folks into our Justices of the Peace courts. We look at the dockets to identify who might be evicted and reach out to them with this program first. We're working with nonprofit groups. We're working with local elected officials from all throughout Harris County. And we're working hard to really try to get that equity piece done and to make sure we're smart about it. And then, of course, being innovative. And that's where the collaboration is key as well. The city of Houston receives some funds. The county receives some funds. Historically, you have these silos. And what we've done is built a single portal where folks can apply, a single application. We have a tracking system, what many of us are used to in the private sector, where you can sort of see, you know, when you order something, you apply to something, see what the status is of what you're pursuing. Well, we have this for the program as well, so nobody's wondering the status of their application. And just synthesizing the work that we're doing so that we're maximizing economies of scale, so we're being creative together, and so that we're leveraging the innovations that the city comes up with, that the county comes up with, that our nonprofit partners come up with. So we're very proud. We're very, very grateful. I firmly believe in what President Biden said is lead, follow, or get out of the way. And I hope that the fact that we've been able to accomplish this in a state that has made so much of the COVID response so difficult is an example for other jurisdictions to lead as well, despite the climate they find themselves in. So I echo the thank you. I am in awe of what my colleagues from around the country are presenting. It's very exciting, and I'm just very, very proud of the opportunity to work with the administration on this.
Thank you so much, Judge Hidalgo. These are really some great examples of how you've been able to deliver rental assistance as quickly as possible. And so I want to turn now to San Antonio Mayor Nirenberg, whose team has similarly leaned into using self-attestation for areas where there have been documentation challenges, and really using some efficiencies to get more people to complete their applications and then speed up processing times. In addition, San Antonio has really been a leader in using culturally relevant outreach efforts. And thanks to all this, as of July 31st, San Antonio has provided almost $43 million in rental assistance, over 90% of the city's total ERA-1 allocation. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mayor Nirenberg.
Thank you very much, Jacob, and thank you to the Biden administration and the partnership at the federal level to help our citizens in need. I'll start by acknowledging that San Antonio, like most every other city in America, struggled with the inequalities and inequities of poverty long before COVID-19 began. And those images of the families, tens of thousands of families lined up for assistance from our food bank, were a stark recognition of the condition that so many millions of Americans found themselves in before coronavirus was even a household word. One financial hardship, one event away from economic catastrophe, and that pandemic became the event that created it. When I was sworn in as mayor in San Antonio in 2017, I quickly formed the Housing Policy Task Force to keep our residents housed in our markets affordable. A 2019 policy that was born of a set of recommendations from our task force was a risk mitigation fund, a tool chiefly designed to combat and to prevent displacement. As those same inequities and inequalities were exacerbated in the wake of the pandemic, we opted to convert our risk mitigation fund into an emergency housing assistance program, or EHAP, as tens of thousands of residents filed for unemployment. City Council then adopted the EHAP in April of 2020, just as the pandemic began, and since its creation, we've approved over $136.7 million in emergency housing assistance to over 46,526 households seeking emergency rental, mortgage, and utility assistance. The total approved budget stands now at $189.3 million. So while we have plenty of room to continue serving our residents in need, and we know that will continue to be the case, we've already distributed, along with the federal funds, leverage dollars, 72% of our total program's budget, expected budget of $190 million. The U.S. Treasury funds account for 51% of the total EHAP budget, or just over $96 million. That includes ERA and ARPA. And rental and utility assistance has currently served over 12,000 San Antonio residents with those funds. It's worth noting that the city is also administering $5.5 million of the U.S. Treasury funding awarded to Bexar County for residents living outside of the San Antonio city limits, and has distributed over $2.3 million of those funds to over 600 households. One element that has helped us better distribute that funding to our residents is additional flexibility afforded for documentation purposes, the self-attestation. We've also prioritized a streamlined application process and a tiered distribution program to serve our most vulnerable residents, qualifying those most in need for additional months of assistance. In fact, we'll cover up to 9 months of back rent or utility bills to ensure that tenants, landlords, and our community can continue to effectively recover. To further support our efforts, we've opened a call center dedicated to housing assistance so our residents can provide real-time feedback on the program. And we have additional monthly check-ins to our community using our housing policy stakeholders, our tenants groups, our housing advocates, legal aid organizations, apartment associations, and property managers. Constant and consistent community input has allowed us to tweak and fine-tune our EHAP to better serve our residents. To ensure our program is being properly taken advantage of, we've partnered with our local health collaborative to do proactive outreach and assist residents with filling out their applications. And if for whatever reason a resident slips through the cracks, we've assigned city staff to our county's eviction courts as a last line of defense to connect both residents and landlords to our emergency housing assistance program. We are in the courts intercepting before eviction occurs. This comprehensive framework is now nationally recognized, and I'm extremely proud of the work that's being done to keep a roof over our neighbors' heads, and extremely grateful for the partnership with the Biden administration. I'm also extremely grateful for my partners at the local level throughout the state of Texas, bipartisan mayors and county judges who have worked together to exchange best practices, ensure that we're looking out for our Texas residents. As always, thank you very much for shining a light on the good work that San Antonio is doing, and I'm looking forward to continuing that good work together. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Mayor Nirenberg, for that work. We really appreciate your efforts, as well as those of Governor Northam, Mayor Fisher, and Judge Hidalgo. I think each of you have provided us with a really clear understanding of how you've been able to effectively deliver rental assistance and how you've taken advantage of some of the flexibilities that Treasury has made available to all grantees. As Jean noted, we're encouraging these flexibilities across the board. And to help, we have a repository on our website of sample documents and forms that cities can use to streamline their rental assistance programs, as well as other information about best practices. We want to enable states and local governments to learn from each other, as hopefully you're doing today. Now this, of course, is part of an all hands on deck approach. And I'm going to turn it now to my colleague, Erica Posig, who's been a key leader in the administration's rental assistance efforts in her role at the White House, where she serves as special assistant to the president for housing and urban policy. And she'll talk about other efforts at the state and local level to protect people from eviction. So I'll turn it over to you, Erica.
Thank you, Jacob. And what a tremendous panel. I drew so much inspiration and gratitude for the work that the governors and mayors and county leaders are doing at the local level to make the kinds of flexibilities that Treasury has provided work to the benefit of renters and landlords. And we need to close that information gap and help them understand the resources that are available. But jurisdictions also have other tools at their disposal, which can bind with effective rental assistance delivery, can also help to ensure that vulnerable households and renters receive the protections and that landlords get paid in full. These include instituting their own eviction moratoria or other protections that buy tenants more time to receive rental assistance. We heard a few of those earlier on this panel, but I'm going to turn now to Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State. Washington State has long been an innovator in housing policy and is now among the leaders in eviction protection, one of three states that has right to counsel. So, Governor, I'll turn it to you to give us more details. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, and thanks for everybody involved in this. We're fortunate to have a great president, vice president leading the charge on this, and I'm inspired by the creative juices of our colleagues as mayors and governors. Particular shout out Judge Hidalgo, who is a hero of all of us in the United States for her courage and creativity, and I know we learn from each other. Look, I just share some things that have been considerably successful for us. We've done many of the things that my colleagues have talked about already, and equity, we're very proud of our equity issues to have 60% of our grants to communities of color. We've been very, very demographically astute on that. We're getting money out the door. The thing that I would just like to share with you that might be a little unique in our state is our eviction diversion program and our bridge program, because it's working. Between completion of a more long-term program to prevent evictions, we needed a bridge. And so I acted through my executive capacity, providing a bridge between our legislative program, which is quite comprehensive, and its actual implementation sometime in October. This bridge has three components. One, to actually get dollars out. We got about $240 million out the door, and we're improving that every day. That's the obvious thing. The second thing that is working, though, is a real eviction diversion program, that this bridge program is working. And we basically require our counties to stand up a program where you have people who are eviction specialists to work with landlords and tenants to come up with an acceptable interim program. And this has been very, very successful, getting people to have some assistance to reach resolution. And that has worked because we've got people in the counties. Now all but three of our counties are participants in this program. And it has worked because we can get people talking to each other. That can actually work. And it is preventing evictions. And I'm very, very happy about it. We stood it up in sort of record time to actually things get stood up in counties by supporting our counties to get this job done. Now, we insisted on this happening if there was going to be any effort towards removal. You have to participate in this program. This is why we're able to get almost all of our counties to participate, even those that are politically controlled by a party that has not been as attuned to the resolution of this as my party has been. So it's been very successful across the state of Washington by insisting that people sit down and talk with one another to come up with interim plans from both sides of the table. Now, the third part of this is having legal counsel for tenants. This is extremely important. Look, only about 30% of people actually even have a chance to show up when there's the formal unlawful detainer action. And so bringing this to the fore, requiring it, is extremely important. Look, a courtroom's a scary place, even for those who practice trial law, as I did for two or three decades. So having legal counsel available is extremely important. That will be available complete coming October, and the vast majority now have it. So that three-step process for an eviction diversion is working. I would commend it. It took relatively little infrastructure. It did take a little insistence from the governor to make sure that all of our local counties get on board. But we found mechanisms to actually make that happen. And so I'm happy about that. Now, we know why this is important. This is only the second virus. The first virus we've had a long time, which is gross economic inequality in our society. And that's why I'm very happy about what the president is leading in the infrastructure bill and the reconciliation bill. We look forward to success on that. But we can do our part locally, and we are. I hope you can share some of the success we've had and then come visit Washington State when you finally get a day off when we've got COVID under control. Thank you.
We will do that, Governor. Thank you. And while there have been states like Washington that have their own eviction moratoria, local governments have also taken action to prevent evictions. And with the end of the federal CDC moratorium, some states and cities have heeded the administration's call and are taking active steps on preventing eviction, for instance, by enacting local eviction moratoria. And Boston and the state of Massachusetts have long had strong tenant protections and policies focused on the preservation of affordable rental housing. And Mayor Janey has joined us today to discuss why and how she enacted an eviction moratorium as part of her broader housing stability agenda in Boston. Thank you so much, Mayor.
Thank you so much, Erica. I am so pleased to join federal, state, and municipal colleagues to address the housing crisis facing Americans. And I want to thank President Biden, Vice President Harris, and the entire administration for convening today's important dialogue, as well as for their work to provide housing stability during this very challenging time. Across the city of Boston, I am proud that we are getting residents vaccinated, welcoming diners and shoppers to our main streets, and safely returning children to school. But as in other cities, the loss of federal eviction protections and the ongoing pandemic are putting our most vulnerable residents at risk of losing their homes. As mayor of Boston, I understand the challenges that many of the residents in my city are facing because I have experienced them. As a young child and young adult, I experienced housing insecurity growing up in Boston. When my parents divorced, I often lived in subsidized housing. At times, we had to double up and even stayed in a shelter for a short period. I was able to rent my very first apartment as a young single mom with a Section 8 voucher. And more than 20 years ago, I was able to purchase my home with the assistance of a first-time home buyers program. My lived experience, as well as my professional experience, as an advocate for children and families, informs my policy agenda as mayor. This is why I worked with my chief of housing and the Boston Public Health Commission to implement a City of Boston eviction moratorium as part of my housing stability agenda for the city. Last week, in response to the Supreme Court striking down the CDC's eviction moratorium, I asked the Boston Public Health Commission to examine the health issues associated with evictions. And on August 31st, the Boston Public Health Commission issued a temporary order establishing an eviction moratorium. The order does not allow a landlord to serve an eviction notice to a Boston resident unless a tenant is engaged in serious violations that impair the health and safety of other residents residing in the building. Boston is also fortunate that the state of Massachusetts has passed legislation that keeps our renters stably housed while they seek rental assistance. With these protections in place, we are working hard with experienced nonprofits to get rental relief into the hands of residents that have lost wages. Boston is also administering its own program. As we all know and all have said, the COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated challenges in every city across the country, and Boston was facing a housing crisis long before COVID. That is why in my very first week in office, I invested $50 million in rental relief. We also refer households to rental relief programs run by the state, and collectively, we have helped over 12,500 Boston households with more than $72 million. In addition to leveraging existing partnerships with nonprofit housing organizations, we established a dedicated program for residents of public housing. And the Boston Housing Authority contacts every public housing tenant that is behind on their rent and helps them apply for rental assistance. This program has been very successful at keeping our lowest income residents safely housed. In addition to using strong partners to reach tenants, Boston has made it easier for tenants to access rental relief. We've created an online application that allows tenants and landlords to work together to apply for rental assistance and submit required documentation. We have adopted a review process where city staff follow up with applicants to request missing materials prior to sending funding requests on to nonprofit partners for processing. We've created helpful templates for tenancy agreements and income verification to support households in informal living and or working arrangements. And we developed a pre-qualification letter to verify eligibility for rental assistance that tenants can use when seeking new housing. Boston is also minimizing the barriers to accessing assistance by accepting multiple forms of documentation to verify housing and allowing households to utilize self-attestation for loss of income and risk of homelessness. My city staff reaches out to every tenant who has received notices to quit for non-payment, and this allows us to intervene in the eviction process and provide direct and timely support. In Boston, we are also addressing the digital divide and language barriers that households can experience by offering application assistance via phone, hosting in-person weekly office hours at neighborhood library branches, and translating all application materials in at least 10 different languages. By connecting with every renter household facing eviction, we have made keeping families in their homes a top priority of Boston's public health recovery. And now I am grateful to turn it back over to Erica. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you to all the mayors and governors and county leaders who have joined us today. The amount of detail and attention you are giving to this is just tremendous, and we are grateful for that. With that, let me turn it to Jean to do closing remarks. Thank you.
I'll be very quick. Just on behalf of Julie Rodriguez and myself, just want to thank this amazing assortment of state and city and local leaders. This is clearly an issue of racial justice. It's an issue of dignity for all family. And at this moment, it is an issue of mitigating a public health emergency. What you've seen is there's two paths to go. One is to deny, delay, and divert the number of evictions. And the second is to innovate and accelerate the distribution of emergency rental assistance. We will have the most success if we are doing both strategies simultaneously. What you've heard from in these mayors and governors is an assortment of those strategies all working towards the same goal. And you've heard such specific ideas on self-attestation, navigators, partnerships with nonprofits, an eviction last line of defense, an eviction diversion board, tier distribution, emergency hires for processing, exceptional outreach like you just heard from the mayor of Boston, and coordination with city and counties. As I said, these efforts are making a very meaningful impact, but we still have a meaningful gap that must be closed because every unnecessary eviction is an unnecessary heartbreak and potential devastation for families that are our neighbors and our loved ones and people we care about. I thank you so much. It is so inspiring to see the actual work and leadership and attention to detail by so many people who realize on this call, so many leaders who realize that behind every bit of that detail is a family whose entire well-being is dependent on that effort. And we hope that this is helpful to other local and state and county leaders in accelerating and innovating their own programs. So with that, thank you very, very much.
Goodbye.